From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture on 910 Classic Country, KCJB in Minot, Ag News 890, Lisbon and Fargo, and Farm News in Real Country, Thunder 106.1, also Lisbon and Fargo. Well, the new September Ag Economy Barometer from Purdue University and CME Group shows a slight uptick over the August value, going from 95 to 101 and still short of the peak rating of 112 in July after a late spring and early summer rally in corn and soybean prices. Jim Minter, director of Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, talked about that rebound.
Part of that was tied back to a little bit of an improvement with respect to some optimism about the future in agriculture. When we look at the index of future expectations, which is based on several of the questions in the barometer survey, that improved from a reading of 102 back in August to 109. And that was one of the big drivers of the improvement. The index of current conditions really didn't change very much. It just moved from 80 to 83. So the driver is this kind of retention of some optimism about the future.
But most say they don't expect widespread good times in either livestock or crop farming. All year long, those surveyed have said that the prices they're sold for less in 2016 and then they sold less in 2016 than typical. In September, an even larger percent said they had priced for and sold less than typical.
It probably reflects to some extent the improvement in yield prospects from July to September, with a recognition now that at least in some locations we're looking at a record crop. And on a nationwide basis, looking at a record crop. So I think that the larger increase in production is being illustrated there. The other thing that it probably shows, though, is that people are reluctant to sell at these recent price levels. And so there is some optimism about where prices are going over the course of the winter and perhaps into the spring, an expectation that we will see some stronger prices and some positive storage returns. So, you know, that suggests there's maybe some risk out there with respect to carrying that large of an inventory, a larger than normal inventory over the course of the storage season.
Now, Purdue and CME Group partnered to produce the barometer each month based on monthly surveys of 400 U.S. ag producers. You can read the full September report, find additional resources, and sign up to receive monthly barometer emails by going to purdue.edu/agbarometer. We'll take a break. Come back. We're going to talk about Mississippi locks next. As we continue on with what's going on inside agriculture, an Illinois congressman's proposal to reform the Inland Waterways Trust Fund and speed up locks projects has caught the attention of the national group that advocates for locks improvements. The Waterways Council is looking at the House provision by Central Illinois Congressman Rodney Davis to study taking management of the trust fund away from the Army Corps. House and Senate bills must still be reconciled. Now, Davis wants a not-for-profit or government-owned firm to run the fund to speed long-delayed locks projects key for shipping 60% of U.S. grain through the Upper Mississippi and Illinois system. Now, Waterways Council Executive Vice President Deborah Calhoun.
We've not taken a position, but we're certainly looking into it. You know, as you well know, we've talked about this many times, it takes far too long to bring these important priority projects online.
Illinois' Davis complained recently that it's been 9 years since Congress authorized construction of seven new 1,200-foot locks along the Upper Mississippi and Illinois waterway system. Yet 9 years later, the Army Corps hasn't even done pre-construction engineering and design for the projects. Calhoun says the 2007 WERDA authorized funds that still need to be appropriated.
And that's a real issue and a priority for Waterways Council. Just having $10 million in TED money for that navigation ecosystem and sustainability program that would both provide increased capacity on the Upper Midwest and Illinois waterway, and then also an equal amount of money and spending and investment for navigation ecosystem sustainability programs.
And Calhoun says the administration has not prioritized the $10 million needed, so the money hasn't been appropriated. Now, without the planning process, the Upper Mississippi and Illinois locks are still not shelf-ready after almost 10 years, prolonging barge delays, hurting U.S. exports, and raising costs for farmers, shippers, and consumers. While as we check other information inside agriculture, Monsanto reported net sales down 10% and profits 42% lower in fiscal year 2016. Monsanto had net sales of $2.6 billion in fiscal year 2016, with net sales for the full fiscal year at $13.5 billion. Full net sales were down year over year thanks to currency challenges and price declines in agricultural productivity. Seeds and genomic net sales were $1.6 billion in the fourth quarter and totaled $10 billion for the year. Ag productivity sales were $997 million for the quarter and for the fiscal year were $3.5 billion. The company's expenses were flat year over year on an as-reported basis. Expenses increased primarily due to $280 million in PCB litigation. Research and development costs decreased slightly due to currency and transformation cost savings. Monsanto reported a net loss of $191 million in the fourth quarter compared to a net loss of $495 million at the same time last year. Now, net income for 2016 was $1.3 billion compared to $2.3 billion in income the year before. Now, Cargill's largest contributor to adjusted operating earnings in the first quarter was the Animal Nutrition and Protein Division. The beef business led the way in profitability, which was helped by higher numbers of cattle in the supply chain, as well as consumer demand for more beef. The poultry-based divisions, along with turkey and egg businesses, were more profitable than they were in the previous year. Now, animal nutrition product sales grew in Asia and North America, contributing to the strong growth as well. Aqua feed sales were down in some countries due to weather-related incidents. The segment's new aqua nutrition unit offset part of the impact with its overall sales strength. Well, we'll take another break here. However, when we come back, Entrepreneurship Challenge, American Farm Bureau Federation, they got some winners. We'll talk about it next. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. Well, American Farm Bureau Federation announced yesterday the finalists in the 2017 Farm Bureau Rural Entrepreneurship Challenge. Now, American Farm Bureau Federation's Lisa Benson says the four finalist teams each win $15,000 and move on to the next round, while six semifinalist teams each win $10,000.
Our top four finalist teams will go on and compete for an additional $25,000 in January 2017 at our American Farm Bureau convention in a live competition.
Now this year, Benson says the finalist teams show a strong positive impact on their rural communities.
What we really look for in the challenge are two things: businesses that are strong from a business plan point of view, and we also look for rural impact. What we found was there's some great ways that our finalists especially are impacting their rural community.
She says the finalists this year show a positive impact on farmers, the environment, and the rural economy.
What we've seen is that these businesses source their employees from that local community. So not only are the people that are the business operators succeeding, but they're also bringing along those community members, helping to hire those folks that are skilled in that local community. So everybody in that community gets a benefit from that business.
Now you can learn more about the challenge and the finalists online at StrongRuralAmerica.com. That's StrongRuralAmerica.com. Well, you're out there in the field, and of course, it is the harvest season. Soybeans are coming off. Corn is actually coming off in all three states. But there are some areas where it's not so hot. Frequent rains are making it challenging for farmers to harvest corn and soybeans in Wisconsin. DeKalb and Asgrow Seeds regional agronomist for Wisconsin, Mike Weiss, said the challenge is to get the field fit enough to actually pull the crops out of those fields.
Unfortunately, I think the best thing is to try to wait as long as we can, but I understand we're against the clock. So I think trying to take the crop off, trying to limit the compaction that we'll have out there. My recommendation has been to our customers is try to scout your cornfields, try to rate those for stock quality, working with the worst ones first and trying to get those off the field. I've even heard some cases where it's been too wet to get soybeans, so they're taking corn instead of soybeans. So I think that's just going to be the challenge, is try to pick the fields that you can pick at the time or cut at the time.
He said it's important to be careful in the fields, as these kinds of wet conditions are risky for people and equipment in the fields. Recent rains are causing soybean tip in the fields in Wisconsin.
Some fantastic yields, but I think that weight is pulling those soybeans down. That's one thing to keep in mind. But then also the stock quality with this rain that we've had. I'm really concerned about stock rot diseases. And you're exactly right. If we get some kind of wind or some other serious weather event, we could have a lot of down corn, and that's certainly going to be a challenge.
Farmers should be keeping several things in mind for next year as they go through this year's harvest.
The thing that I'd be looking for in soybeans is we've had some disease issues in the western part of the state, southern death syndrome, some white mold. Try to put those fields in your memory or in your field book and get some idea where those diseases are for the next time you come back in with soybeans. And the same with weeds. We're seeing some weed issues, particularly water hemp. Again, try to plan that weed control program for next year.
Now, Weiss said the amount of water in Wisconsin fields will mean each field will need individual solutions to the challenges that much moisture presents during this harvest season. Definitely some issues in Wisconsin. Well, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to hit you up with, believe it or not, yep, it looks like bees are in the endangered list for the first time in American history. We'll talk about that next. Well, as we wrap up what's going on inside agriculture, a species of bees is on the endangered species list for the first time in American history. A CNN report says seven bee species native to Hawaii are on the protected list as U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service added yellow-faced bees to the list after years of research showed they're endangered. The rule's effective October 31st. Bees are crucial for the nation's food industry as they pollinate fruits, nuts, and vegetables. Various factors have led to a decline in bee populations, which CNN cites as habitat loss, pesticides, and a loss of genetic diversity. The Xerces Society, named after an extinct species of California monarch butterfly, was involved in filing petitions to get bees under protection. Now, during the pollination period, insects, birds, and bats all transfer pollen between plants, allowing them to produce seeds and reproduce. Listing the bees on the endangered species list allows authorities to provide recovery programs and fund protection efforts. Well, hog prices, they've fallen far below break-even levels. And there are worries about the number of hogs headed to market in the fall. A Purdue University report says the numbers may exceed packer plant capacity. And a recent USDA September hog and pig report didn't help the situation, as numbers are 3% higher this year. Animal numbers in the heaviest categories were up 4%. The number that brought the greatest concern in the September report was the packer head counts were up by 8%. Slaughter capacity is about 2% higher than the headcounts over the past couple of weeks, but the USDA expects slaughter numbers to ease by the end of the year. Well, there it is, a look at what's going on today inside agriculture. Appreciate the time, and by all means, join me again tomorrow, same time. I'm Farm Director Terry Loomis.